and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the Hammond firefighter facing termination after he allegedly displayed a noose in a fire department office. Lauren Chapman reports Indiana announced Wednesday it would not be extending vaccine registration to the next age group, 60 and older, this week. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with MakeMyMove.com co-founder Evan Hawk. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The Hammond firefighter facing termination after he allegedly displayed a noose and sexually explicit drawings in a fire department office has been identified as Russell William Dews, an engineer first hired on in 1998. The noose and drawings were found in a Robertsdale Fire Station office on January 28th while city information technology workers were installing fiber optic cables. The office was locked and fire department personnel had to assist the IT workers by jimmying the lock open with a pocket knife. According to city documents obtained by the Times through a Freedom of Information Act request, Fire Chief Jeffrey Smith is petitioning the Hammond Board of Public Works and Safety to fire Dews. The petition is seeking termination on the grounds Dews violated the firefighter's creed and several department rules and state code that include disobedience of orders, immoral behavior, conduct injurious to the public peace or welfare, conduct unbecoming of a firefighter, and conduct that, quote, reduces the prestige and reputation of the Hammond Fire Department. An internal affairs investigation was opened by Hammond Police Department at Mayor Thomas McDermott Jr.'s request. The petition seeking Dews' termination states that a noose has been used for generations as a symbol of hatred, threat, deplorable acts, racial intolerance, and brutality. In Fire Chief Smith's petition, Dews admitted the noose was, quote, passed along to him by other firefighters as a joke, and that he kept the item in the pension office at Fire Station Number 2. City records state, when ordered by his superiors to disclose the origin of the noose, Dews allegedly refused a direct order and refused to cooperate with the investigation. Last week, McDermott expressed disgust at the racial implications of what was found in the office. Mayor McDermott declined further comment on Wednesday, saying it was a personnel matter. Dews earned more than $100,000 in 2020 as an engineer. The Hammond Board of Works and Public Safety will meet next Thursday. The Hammond Board of Works and Public Safety will meet next Thursday, though any potential hearing on the matter will not take place on that day.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Gary Mayor Jerome Prince testified Wednesday before the Indiana General Assembly Committee on Public Policy, calling on legislators to pass House Bill 1090, a bill that promotes lakefront development projects. Mayor Prince said the bill will help transform 6 miles of the Lake Michigan shoreline in his city. He goes on to say House Bill 1090 would be a catalyst for continued lakefront development by encouraging private investment in the area. The bill will also free up local, state, and federal money for development. House Bill 1090 also complements recent legislation to fully fund the $491 million South Shore Double Track project. The legislation will be an important factor in the Reimagine Gary initiative. Under House Bill 1090, Gary can build city parks, boost tourism to the city's lakefront, and promote private investment in the area. Mayor Prince also told committee members the city of Gary plans to partner with the Indiana Dunes National Park to leverage tourism to the national park, Gary's own Marquette Park, and the natural beauty of the Lake Michigan shoreline to increase economic development in the area. House Bill 1090 would also eliminate a state requirement that an oil refinery be located within a municipal lakefront development project. Eliminating that requirement will encourage businesses to come to Gary and take advantage of the lakefront.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana announced Wednesday it would not be extending vaccine registration to the next age group, 60 and older, this week. But health officials outlined what the phase after that looks like. Once appropriate vaccine supplies are available, the Indiana Department of Health will incrementally extend eligibility to both Hoosiers 50 and older, as well as those with five specific comorbidities. Conditions that make COVID-19 more deadly. Chief Medical Officer Dr. Lindsay Weaver says that decision was made with the state's Vaccine Advisory Committee.
We know that these categories do not include all Hoosiers who have conditions that could put them at greater risk from COVID, but we are working to expand to those most at risk as quickly as our vaccine supplies allow us to do so.
More than 850,000 Hoosiers are over the age of 50, and the comorbidities add 51,000 to that group. Weaver says, depending on the vaccine supply, the state will continue opening eligibility in five-year increments by age group. For Hoosiers with comorbidities, it's likely to be a rolling process with direct outreach from primary care providers.
Those lists of comorbidities by the nature of their disease have to be pretty plugged in with providers.
Weaver says she's hopeful Indiana's vaccine supplies would see some significant increases as Johnson & Johnson submits its vaccine for emergency use authorization.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Legislation approved by the Senate Monday would give more power to local city or county leaders to overturn the actions of local health officials. The measure is a reaction to local decisions made during the COVID-19 pandemic. If a business is fined or shut down in response to an emergency health order, businesses could now appeal that decision to their city council or county commissioners, depending on whether it was a county or city health official who enforced the order. That enforcement action is halted until the appeal is either heard or denied.
Yes, we want to make sure that our public health is protected, but we also have to make sure that our businesses can survive.
But Democratic Senator Jean Brough says the public needs to trust local health officials.
A public emergency once declared, either by a local health officer or a governor, should be respected and adhered to until the crisis has passed.
The bill passed 40-8 and now heads to the House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Pregnant workers could ask for workplace accommodations under a new bill headed to the House floor, but employers would not be required to grant them. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports several groups say it's a start to help expectant mothers and their babies, but does not go far enough.
Accommodations for pregnant workers could include things like extra bathroom breaks or limiting heavy lifting. The legislation would require employers to receive requests and respond to them in a reasonable time frame and without retaliation. Employment law expert Deborah Wydus testified that under two federal laws, many employers may already be required to provide accommodations. But if that isn't mirrored in state law, she says employers could be confused about their responsibility.
I think it just creates the risk that businesses end up exposing themselves to more legal liability without really taking a step forward for pregnant workers.
Other bills that would require employers to provide accommodations have not yet been scheduled for committee discussion. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Republicans in a city committee pulled back slightly Tuesday on a bill that originally would have criminalized almost anyone attending a protest that turns violent. The measure's initial language said anyone at such a protest could be charged with a Class B misdemeanor unless they immediately leave or alert police, whether or not they were involved in the violence. Republican Senator Mike Young, the bill's author, deleted that language and instead created a new crime, a conspiracy charge for misdemeanors committed while attending a protest.
All this is an attempt to make sure we can have peaceful protests by our citizens, that their message is heard loud and clear by the elected officials, and to keep our businesses safe.
Young also removed language from the bill that said all rioters could be charged with felony murder if anyone at that riot was killed.
And this bill does not just try to protect people's freedom of speech. It creates liability, and I think that liability is going to create a lessening of people's freedom of speech.
The bill, which is aimed at last summer's Black Lives Matter protests, passed committee along party lines.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Senate on Monday voted to override Governor Eric Holcomb's veto of a landlord-tenant bill. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports on the move that would restrict local governments from enacting measures to increase renters' rights and penalize landlords.
Senate Enrolled Act 148 was opposed by a large coalition of housing rights advocates who say it negatively impacts renters across the state and increases evictions. Democratic Senator Tim Lannon says Holcomb vetoed the measure because of the pandemic.
He said, "I believe this is not the right time for such language to become law." And he was talking about the fact that we're right in the middle of an emergency.
The last-minute language was added to another bill and seemed to target new Indianapolis ordinances that seek to increase tenant rights and fine bad-acting landlords. This past year, eviction moratoriums have prevented many from losing their homes. Republican Senator Aaron Freeman says it's time to overturn the veto.
Folks, this matters. I mean, there are a lot of landlords that are hurting.
The House also needs a simple majority vote to overturn. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana teachers could see extra steps to pay union dues in the future if a bill headed to the Senate floor succeeds. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports testimony weeks ago sparked lengthy debate about the contentious measure.
The bill would make teachers sign forms each summer allowing their union to automatically deduct dues from paychecks. The forms would include bold font language informing them of their rights to not join a union, and if teachers forgot to renew, their membership would lapse. Senators voting for the measure said it would help teachers make, quote, informed decisions about their dues and membership. But president of the Indiana State Teachers Association, Keith Gamble, says it's trying to solve a non-existent problem and will only serve to hurt teachers and students.
Staff time that's going to have to be devoted from school districts is staff time off of other work that would have been assigned. And that money ends up coming out of the classrooms, and it's hurting kids.
The bill passed the committee on a mostly party line 6-4 vote. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Pregnant workers could ask for workplace accommodations under a new bill headed to the House floor, but employers would not be required to grant them. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports several groups say it's a start to help expectant mothers and their babies, but does not go far enough.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's Regionally Speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with MakeMyMove.com co-founder Evan Huck.
Well, many people are working from home these days because of the coronavirus pandemic. Many, many people are in some cases, and it may or may not be the best place to be. That is, maybe you want to be in the office, but maybe the office you've determined is not the best place to be because of the pandemic. And there are dozens of major companies that have already agreed that their workers don't have to return back. But maybe where you live is not exactly the best place where you want to live, and you still are able to work at home. Well, there is a new marketplace that's available on the internet called MakeMyMove.com. It was founded right here in Indiana, and we have with us the co-founder of MakeMyMove.com, Evan Hawk, with us. Evan, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Tell us more about you and your co-founder, Bill Osterley, who is a very important entrepreneur in his own right, and what gave you the idea to be able to create this website that's out there where people can find maybe not only a good place to live, but some place that will be really, really worth bringing your family to and living.
Yeah, thanks. So Bill and a handful of co-founders all came from Angie's List. And after our Angie's List tenure, we started a company called TeamApp, which was essentially a platform that helps companies find and engage talented folks for hire. What we found that during the pandemic is that the number of remote workers had exploded. And sure enough, many communities were actually trying to recruit those remote workers to live and work in their region. So we built Make My Move to help those communities connect with remote workers and help remote workers find their next home.
When you all came up with the idea, obviously, as working with TeamApp and wanted to expand it into the new website, MakeMyMove.com, did you find that you had your own personal experiences to draw upon or your coworkers to say, hey, I'm working out of the house now and working out of my office at home, or maybe I'm working out of my bedroom or the living room or wherever it may happen to be, that you've set up the laptop and the camera and you're able to take those Zoom meetings and all. Did you find that, look around the house or around the apartment and say, well, maybe this is a good place and maybe this isn't?
Certainly. We have each experienced it over the last year. Working in tech, this has been a common practice for many years. You know, software engineers, many have worked from home for a long time. I think what we realized is that so many more industries and so many more professions were now sort of able to work remotely. And as we talk to these remote workers, we find that they love it. You know, the quality of life improvement that they get, you know, that no commute time, getting to spend more time with family, and frankly, they report being more productive. I think that even after the pandemic subsides, we expect many of these workers to want to stay remote, and we think many companies will continue to adopt the remote culture.
How is MakeMyMove.com set up so that if somebody is interested in looking for a nice place to live, take advantage of some of the opportunities that may be in some other community that they are not in, but maybe they've heard of, how do they find out more about that particular community and see if it's going to be a good fit?
So we operate just like a online marketplace. It's free for the remote workers. They can come sort of shop for their next home. All of the offers are listed on the site. They can learn about the communities, learn about the specific incentives, and how they can take advantage of those incentives. Mm-hmm. From the community standpoint, it's a place that they can sort of list their area. They can promote themselves to the remote workers. And our job is to essentially help them play matchmaker to make sure that folks find the right communities and the communities find the right remote workers.
Are these opportunities maybe, I hate to think that it's strictly to chambers of commerce, but you can't help but think that they may not have some ideas to be able to better promote their particular communities. Do they take advantage of these opportunities to let people out there know that they're open for business, so to speak?
They certainly do. And, you know, it's funny, it varies region to region, sort of who is taking the lead in promoting the region. So we certainly have areas where the local chambers are taking the lead. Lots of times it's the economic development corporations set up by the state. There are other areas where it's privately funded, you know, through local companies or foundations that pony up the money for the incentives. What we're finding, though, is that many of these communities lack sort of a centralized way or an effective, predictable way that they can find and engage these remote workers. So we aim to just make it easy for them. As typical engagement, we work with the community, sort of define what they're looking for and what they might be willing to spend. And then we build campaigns to help them find and engage those remote workers.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're talking here, I guess, about the carrot and stick approach to entice people to look into a particular community, a particular city or town or a county, anywhere, I guess, but in particular here in Indiana. What kind of incentives do some of the people that you all work with, communities that you work with, maybe I should say, are making it out there to let people know, hey, it's a good place to live, good place to set up your remote office?
Yeah, the incentives run the gamut from, cash offers. There are communities that are offering, $10,000-$15,000 of cash for folks to move. Others are offering loan forgiveness. For instance, Southwest Michigan, right there near your neck of the woods, Benton Harbor and those area communities are offering $15,000 towards a new home purchase in the area, and then a bunch of additional perks on top of that. So, it's really early in this market development. New communities are popping up all the time, and they're getting really creative with the types of incentives that they come up with. We're excited to see what it looks like, a year from now.
I know that in my little information telling me a little bit more about MakeMyMove.com, some of the incentives include not only, as you mentioned, cash, but the communities along the Michigan shoreline are trying to attract people to live there and set up their remote offices there, but also offers to be able to take advantage of discounts on food. Tell us about, I guess it's the communities that would offer up a year of sandwiches if you happen to move there.
Yeah, well, that's a great example of the creativity of some of these communities. So Topeka, Kansas is one of such creative areas. So they are offering $10,000 in relocation costs. But in addition to that, you get $1,000 of Jimmy John's sandwiches that come with it. So it's a great example of where they're trying to target maybe a younger audience. People will often look at the $10,000 as a big perk, but I think the remote workers are looking for a sense of the local community's identity. And so some of these special incentives are really a great way for the communities to communicate that identity.
Is there any particular common idea or a concept that they are all seeming to be using, that they use in their marketing strategy to be able to attract remote workers to come live in their community?
I think we're kind of in the Wild West right now. It's such a new concept that the communities are just trying to figure out, one, how to get people's attention, and then two, how to get people across the finish line to actually make a move. So we are seeing a lot of the communities sort of falling into the, somewhere between $10,000 and $15,000 of incentive. And then additionally, some of these perks help sweeten the deal. But I think as time goes on, these communities are going to recognize just how valuable these transplant workers are. And we expect that as communities start to compete for these new residents, that those offers are going to increase in value.
Now, let me ask on the other side, are any companies, major companies or smaller companies, making this information available if necessary? I know they don't want to lose the workers, but maybe it doesn't really matter to them, obviously, where they live. And this would be a benefit not only to the company, they keep their valuable workers who are working remotely now, and the workers themselves would have a nice place to live that may be a little better than where they are now. Any companies that are saying, hey, maybe you should check out this website?
Yeah, I think what we're finding is that companies across the board are seeing the value in remote work for a couple of reasons. One, it dramatically reduces the cost of sort of housing their employees. But two, it just opens up the labor pool. It becomes a global labor pool. They can hire people from anywhere. So we're finding that companies are very supportive. They want their employees to be happy. So we have had them sort of refer employees to us. And we're excited to see sort of how the sort of adoption of this remote work revolution extend even beyond the pandemic.
Well, Evan, now we've talked about the website, the reasons behind it, the importance of getting involved. If anybody's interested in finding out what communities are available, they type in makemymove.com. What do they do from that point on?
Yeah, go to makemymove.com. It's totally free for the remote workers. They'll find a slew of offers. They can indicate which ones that they're interested in. We'll connect them to those local communities, help them apply for the incentive, and then we're there along the way to answer any questions if they have trouble redeeming those.
Evan Hock is one of the co-founders of MakeMyMove.com, which is a marketplace on the line from out of Indianapolis that connects remote workers with communities that offer incentives to get people to relocate to different communities, even though maybe it's not close to home now, but it might be someday soon for some, to be able to work online and find a nice place to live. And Evan, thank you very much for being with us.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.